some believe our yearning for real food is inextricably bound up in our desire to be fed. This thought leads us to ask, can feeding the soil feed one's spirit?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 950th edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Christchurch who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, wherever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Aaron Shore at the controls. Aaron.
Yes.
Question.
Yeah.
Can feeding the soil feed one's spirit?
Sure. Put you in touch with Earth.
There you go, folks. Some time ago, I hosted an edition of the Food Chain Radio program show from a major prison. The focus of that Food Chain show was the prison's horticultural program, which was a program in which prisoners tended the prison's soils and its plants. Now, while touring the prison grounds with a warden, it became obvious to me the prison contained two kinds of inmates, those who were not part of the prison's horticultural program and those who were. Those who were not part of the horticultural program tended to hang out about the prison's cement-covered exercise yards where they pumped iron, as it were. Not much else to pump in a prison, but iron and cement. Those who were part of the horticultural program worked their way about the grounds where they tended the prison's soil and its plants. One could easily see the difference between these two groups of men by looking in their eyes. Well, those who were not part of the program had the look of being totally present, as if they were predator or prey in the jungle. Eat or be eaten. Those who were part of the horticultural program had the look of being not totally there, as if they had somehow tunneled out and escaped, free at last. The eyes of those inmates who had their hands in the soil stayed with me through the years. Recently, I came across the following in Fred Bonson's book, Soil and Sacrament. Our yearning for real food is inextricably bound up in our spiritual desire to be fed. Fred's thought leads me to ask, how can feeding the soil feed one's spirit? And who better to ask than the man with the thought himself, Fred Bonson, who is the director of the Food, Faith, and Religious Initiative at Wake Forest University, also the author of Soil and Sacrament. Fred, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael. Good to be with you.
Pleasure to have you aboard. Well, goodness sakes, first of all, what is the Food, Faith, and Religious Initiative at Wake Forest University?
Yeah, the Food, Faith, and Religious Leadership Initiative is a project that started about a year and a half ago, and I'm the founding director there, and the dean at the Divinity School was wanting to start some kind of sustainability initiative, and we spent about a year in conversation talking about what that might look like, and we came up together with this idea to start a Food and Faith Initiative training religious leaders and everything related to sustainable food systems.
Hmm. Well, ask our guests who pays the way. So who pays the way for the initiative?
Yeah. Well, the dean does right now. it's sort of coming out of her special dean's budget. But part of my job is fundraising and grant writing. So hopefully that will take on more of a funding role as years progress.
Good enough. And then you're the author of Soil and Sacrament. First of all, I'd like you to explain, for those who do not know, exactly what a sacrament is.
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, as I understand it, I'm no expert theologically, but as I understand it, a sacrament is something that is an ordinary thing of the world, which becomes a channel of God's presence. So it's an ordinary thing like bread or wine that becomes somehow a channel of God's grace, a channel of divine presence. And so we see that you know, in Christians practicing the Lord's Supper, the Eucharist. That's often the easiest example of what a sacrament is. Another would be water with baptism. So, you know, water is something we encounter every day. You know, 90-some percent of our bodies are made of water. But in a liturgical worship setting, that water suddenly becomes something more than just H2O. And so I use the phrase sacrament in my book, bringing it together with soil, to talk about how soil becomes a sacrament, how soil becomes a channel of divine mystery.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, your notion that our yearning for real food, well, we've been doing a lot of yearning for real food in the past decade or so, where there's a the whole organic food movement, there's a local food movement, so there's a whole lot of yearning going on for real food. But you're saying that it's more than just feeding our bodies here. It's, we're feeding our spirit as well, correct?
That's right. That's right, yeah. And that was really, I think, the desire I had to write this book was that, you know, they're all kinds of great books on this, you know, this recent food movement, this desire among folks to reconnect with real food, healthy food, organic food, local food, whatever label you want to give it. But I think that desire is more than just getting healthy calories in our bodies. You know, it's so much more. It's the bonds of community. It's reconnecting with the land. And it's reconnecting with, I think, our truer selves, which, you know, all of those things are part of the life of faith as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to write about how this food movement and how this desire to reconnect with real food is at the heart of, I think, you know, the religious quest, the spiritual quest as well.
Well, this desire would suggest that we're missing something someplace along the line here in our modern city-centered lives, that something that we want, it just isn't there. What is it?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're suffering from this massive disconnect in our society. I think we have, you know, with the advent of industrial agriculure and you know, our modern capitalist society, we have all these conveniences and we have all this food, you know, on the shelves and all this abundance, but we're not connected to it. We don't know where our food comes from. We don't know the people who grow it. We don't know the conditions of the workers who harvested our food. There's all this ignorance on our part as eaters. And while we have incredibly cheap food, you know, we spend something like 10% of our income, which is the least of any developed country, on our food. We have really cheap food, but we don't know where it comes from, and we don't know who's growing it. We don't know how it's grown. And it turns out, and, you know, this is the rise of all these food books in the recent decade, it turns out that the way we've been getting our food, the practices that allow us to have such cheap food and such abundance, aren't all that good for us and aren't all that good for the earth.
And perhaps not all that cheap when it gets right down to the true cost of production, right?
That's right. All those costs get externalized, and we have, you know, dead zones in the Gulf of Mexico as a result of fertilizer runoff, and we have climate change as a result of too much fossil fuels in our food system, and all these sort of externalities that we'd like to pretend aren't there, but the closer we look, the more we see that this whole way we're eating is really not doing us a whole lot of good. And so what I really wanted to capture in this book is okay, what would a more healthy, spiritually grounded way of eating and relating to the earth look like? And I really wanted to set out and find the best examples of people who were living in close connection with the land in some way.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to follow you as you go on your journeys here, but the best expression that I've ever found of that is in the juxtaposition of those prison inmates. The ones that were working in the soil and the ones that were not working in the soil. And I often think of it almost as those who are not working in the soil, as almost like city people who have just lost touch with the soil. And because of that, they're kind of like wild animals in the jungle, a predator or prey, and they have that look in their eye. But that's what the conversation is going to be about today, folks. Can feeding the soil feed our spirit? We're talking with Fred Bonson. He, the author of Soil and Sacrament. And we're also talking with you, if you so desire, to talk about this interesting subject of soil and food and faith. 831-479-1080 or 479-1080 or 800-624-2665. Right back on the Food Chain Radio Program.
Get this. You can earn a 5, 6, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city. You can be old or young, rich or poor, married or single. You can rent, lease, or own. You can farm small fruits on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, flowers on steep wooded hillsides, vegetables in city green belts, ornamentals in neighborhoods of million-dollar homes. There's only one catch. You must compete with other farmers for the consumer dollars. You can compete with others and win the consumer dollars with the help of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for profit in or near the city. MetroFarm is the Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner that will guide you step by step through the planning and development of your very own income-generating metropolitan farm. Abraham Lincoln said the greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living on a small parcel of land. Get in on the future today. Get a copy of MetroFarm at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, folks, sometimes we think we're getting away with things by not being connected with the earth that feeds us. And we live on the top of a skyscraper and look down on the world and think we've got it made. But maybe we're missing something, and that's the subject of today's program of food, of faith, and of spirit. And we're talking with Fred Bonson. He, the author of Soil and Sacrament. And Fred, there's a lot to eat in your book, Soil and Sacrament. And one of the morsels I enjoyed was the notion by St. Augustine that we are terra animata.
Yeah, terra animata, animated earth. That's Augustine's phrase. And I think I also, in that section, mentioned the second chapter of Genesis, which is sort of the first time, or I guess one of the oldest written accounts of that idea that we are earth, that we are earth with spirit. And in the Genesis account, the second chapter talks about God creating the Adam from the Adama, the human from the humus. And I love that connection there. I love that etymological clue that our lives are intimately connected to the soil. We are animated earth.
And that's a kind of a notion that it's easy to forget. What do you mean animated earth? What was St. Augustine suggesting there? And what was Genesis suggesting that from humus comes humans? I mean, that's a pretty stark statement.
It really is, yeah. And it's, but we're not just earth, you know. We're not just walking dirt. we're also animated by spirit. And in the Genesis account, God forms the Adam in this shape and breathes life into him. It breathes God's breath into this earthling. And so we're both. We're spirit and earth. And I think one of the things, you know, as I've studied the Christian tradition, one of the great temptations is to always think that we're just spirit, that we're not really bodies, that our bodies can sort of be disregarded, or, you know, this whole idea of our spirits flying away, you know, while the earth burns. That's, you get that kind of crazy thinking that way, but really that's an old dualism that's been with us since Socrates, this idea that we're somehow split between body and soul, when really, if you're reading the Genesis account closely, I think it's we're always both. You can't split them in half. And so part of what I think is happening with this food movement that I've tried to write about in the book is people wanting to live more holistic lives where their bodies and spirits are given equal due.
Well, let's go back and to pick that up. Let's go back to what Adam or God tells Adam, you know, till and keep this fertile soil because all of life depends on it. So your job, Adam, and people is to tend what I have given you, which is the soil.
Right. Yeah, it's really our first human vocation is to till and keep the soil. And another translation I've read is to serve and preserve the soil. So we have this kind of task of caretaking for the soil, and obviously we don't eat if we don't. And that's really that idea that our eating and our flourishing depends on our ability to care for the soil. That's been lost in the past, I don't know, 50 or 100 years with the rise of industrial agriculure.
Well, now that's what I want to pick up, too, because I think it really has a bearing on this whole notion of spirit. Because in the industrialization of our agriculture, we've kind of industrialized the soil to the extent that, you know, in the new Food Safety Modernization Act, it seems as though the whole forward motion of agriculture is to get rid of the life in soil, is to have an inert or a lifeless soil.
Right. Yeah. it makes no sense, does it?
Well, it must make some kind of sense because people are making a lot of money on growing food in that kind of medium and selling it to us.
Sure. Yeah, it's that whole idea that, you know, you sort of blast the soil with some kind of fungicide and kill off all the life, and then you can feed it what you want to feed it, and it's this. I think it's the goal of having total control over the crop. It's not allowing for any possible contamination. It's ultimate human control. That's kind of the industrial ideal, I think. And I think what a lot of people are coming back to is, you know, looking to natural systems, looking to the creation and seeing the order that's already embodied there and then mimicking our agriculture based on that. And that, to me, is a really exciting idea, but it requires a lot of trust. It requires a lot of giving up control. And I think that giving up control is sort of a spiritual discipline.
Oh, now we get to a very interesting thing. To those who believe in a material world, is it possible to give up control? I mean, if you're a spiritual person, you seek to give up. What is it the monks say that was really fascinating? That we beg you, God, make us truly alive.
Yeah,
and that's giving in to a God. You're giving in, but if you're the material person who believes only in the mechanical, can you give in? Can you give up, or must you just totally control?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think the kind of mechanistic understanding of the universe definitely leads to or definitely prohibits you from giving up control. You know, if you're always trying to control every outcome of your crop or your whatever you're doing out there on the farm or in your spiritual life, it becomes really hard to relinquish control. But I think it's good to give up a certain amount of control, and it's healthy.
Well, I'd like to ask you to make a qualitative judgment here. And because one of the things that really struck me about your book, Soil and Sacrament, was the notion that our yearning for real food is inextricably bound up in our desire to be fed. And so I'd ask, can we be spiritually fed from food grown in lifeless soil?
Yeah, I think that's a real live question, and I think it's one we should be asking as we sit down to eat our, you know, McDonald's hamburger and fries and all of the other stuff that's part of the American diet. I mean, my friend Norman Wiersbe, he and I co-wrote a book before Soil and Sacrament. He and I co-wrote a book called Making Peace with the Land. And Norman is an eco-theologian, and he has a great little...
Wait a minute. What is an eco-theologian?
Well, a theologian who pays attention to this kind of stuff that we're talking about. So, he reads ecology and also reads theology and brings the two into conversation. But he asked the question, you know, can we really say grace over a meal, you know, that's been raised, you know, the hog has been raised in a CAFO, the vegetables have been sprayed with pesticides, the tomato has been harvested by somebody who didn't get paid fairly. I mean, can we really give thanks to God over a meal like that? And that's, I think that's a live question that each one of us has to answer.
Well, folks, that's the question of the day, I guess. Can feeding the soil feed one's spirit? And conversely, can eating food from lifeless soil feed one's spirit? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Michael Olson with Fred Bonson, the author of Soil and Sacrament. We will be right back after these messages. Please do stay tuned. Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host today. We're talking Soil and Sacrament with Fred Bonson. Fred, one question that always comes to my mind is that why are the metaphors of food and farm so endemic in religious literature?
Well, I think it's because most people down through human civilization have been farmers or gardeners. They've grown food, or they've somehow been involved in food production. And so that's kind of the language that makes the most sense. You know, sports metaphors wouldn't really apply to the ancient Israelites, but you start talking about humans created in a garden, and that makes a lot of sense. You know, in Jesus' parables of the sower, mm-hmm. and so forth. So I think...
Well, there are always things growing and the forces that allow for growth and development. And I was wondering, you know, could one replace the metaphor of food or farm with that of city or sport? I'm not sure it would work all that well. What is it that we're seeking when we talk about these things that we would be missing if we were talking about, you know, sport or city?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's talking about natural created life that God creates. You know, the seed is planted, and through some mysterious process, it begins to grow. And that's true for our souls and our spirits. You know, there's a mysterious inward process to our spiritual growth, and it needs nurture. It needs darkness. You know, it needs time away from the light, away from public attention, you might say. Our souls need that to grow, but they also need light. They also need to be in the company of others, and they need nurturing and care. So all those, there's a lot of parallels back and forth between the metaphor of the garden and horticulture on the one hand and spirituality on the other. And I think, you know, something like sports, you just can't take the metaphor quite as far.
No, it doesn't quite work, or the metaphor of cities. You know, you were talking about how our souls need, you know, the light of togetherness, and it reminds me of kind of a humus, you know, that soil constituent, the glue that holds soil particles together, and then and the notion of how what you talk about, how soil can be used kind of as a humus to bind communities together. And I guess that's when it gets right down to it is the essence of what your book Soil and Sacrament is, because you travel to different communities of faith and view how those communities use food and the growth of the soil to bind that community together. And it's kind of striking to me because I was on the board of a community garden in Aptos, California, Aptos Community Garden. So I got to watch firsthand the development of that community garden, as did you. You also were in on the founding of a community garden. Let's talk a little bit about that and how those community gardens or the growth of those gardens really builds a community.
Yeah, I helped start a community garden in Cedar Grove, North Carolina, back in 2005. It's called Anathoth, taken from the book of Jeremiah. And the garden was a five-acre piece of land. We grew about an acre of biointensive vegetables and fruits. And it was for low-income families primarily. We taught folks how to grow food, but they were the ones doing a lot of the work. And so it was almost like a garden co-op in a way. We farmed the land communally, we grew the food communally, and we divided it up according to the, you know, whoever showed up that week. And over those 4 years, I really saw both the promise and the peril, I think, of community gardens. Because on the one hand, they're great. I mean, who doesn't love community gardens? You know, it's a sort of an easy thing to...
There are those that don't.
But the problem is, you know, the problem with community gardens is the community part.
Yeah.
And you know, you have to deal with people. Mm-hmm. And I think whenever people gather in a group, there are going to be tensions. Mm-hmm. And so I think part of what I learned is how you work through those and how you can do that in a way that helps the whole community to thrive. And it's really difficult work to be a leader in that kind of setting. And I found that after 4 years of that, I was pretty burned out, yeah. Pretty ready for a break.
I think that's why the military always shifts officers from, you know, from position to position. They give you a couple years in one place and it's time to move on before you get too old. Well, you did visit four very interesting communities of faith. Let's pick them up and talk a little bit about them. We'll start with the Mepkin Abbey in South Carolina.
Yeah. So Mepkin is a abbey, a monastery of Trappist monks, and Trappists are part of the Benedictine tradition, which, as it turns out, is the oldest Christian agrarian tradition in the world. It's about 1,500 years old. And these Trappist monks, many people know the Trappists as makers of beer, very fine beer in places like Belgium. But these monks grow mushrooms for their livelihood. And so I went to write about their lives, and I spent about a week with them, getting up at 3 a.m. for morning prayer, and then going out to work in the mushroom sheds, growing shiitake and oyster mushrooms, and sort of learning that balance between the life of work and the life of prayer. And those guys have had, you know, they've had 1,500 years to figure out that balance, and I'd say they've got it pretty well dialed in.
There's one thing I'd like to point out before we move on with respect to that lifestyle. And in Soil and Sacrament, you talk about the monastics through history as being people who are running to something instead of running away from something.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, as I mentioned in the book, the early monks, you know, those first monks in the deserts of Egypt were not running away from civilization. I think that's often a misconception that monastics are people who flee from the world, but really they'll tell you that they're running toward God. They're running toward a life so ordered that helps them become their truer selves. And so they'd see their life of retreat and solitude as really a way to become more fully human, to become more fully the people God created them to be. And for that means working with their hands, working with the soil, working outside, you know, doing doing manual labor alongside their life of prayer.
Do you think we city people miss that in some way?
Absolutely. Yeah, I do. I missed it myself, and I did not grow up with any farming or gardening or interest in the soil. I grew up in Montana. I was a skier and a climber and a, you know, outdoors person.
Uh-oh, another Montana boy?
Another Montana boy. We used to curse the Canadian or the Californians, by the way. I have to confess.
Well, having been raised in Montana,
up here.
Yeah, having been raised in Montana myself, I know well the curse.
Folks, this is
the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here with Fred Bonson, Soil and Sacrament, and we're talking a little bit about something most people don't think a lot of, I suspect, and that's the relationship between soil and spirit. Can feeding the spirit, the soil, feed the spirit as well? Right back with Fred. Do stay tuned. Well, here's a question. What could we learn about soil and spirit from the mushroom-growing monks of Mepkin Abbey? Well, let's ask Fred Bonson. What could we learn about soil and spirit from those monks, Fred?
We learn that they're tied together and can't be separated, that we come from the soil and it's to the soil that we return. And for the monks, that means getting out and putting your hands in the soil and using your hands as a way to work on yourself. So the monks there that I visited, they're living on their own. They lead somewhat solitary lives, but they're also coming together for prayer and coming together for work every day. And one of the young brothers there, Brother Dismas, he said, you know, I studied academic theology at Notre Dame for 4 years, and he said my faith was all from the neck up. And he said, I came to the monastery because I wanted to learn how to put the faith in my hands. So for him, that meant coming and hoisting mushroom columns and packing cotton seed hulls into plastic bags and inoculating them with oyster mushroom spores and harvesting the mushrooms. For him, that was very much doing spiritual work.
Mm-hmm. And then from there, the Lord's Acre in North Carolina.
Yeah, the Lord's Acre was a garden started in 2009, and it's actually a half an acre. and on that half an acre, they've started producing 8 tons of organic produce every year, which is, to me, is just an astounding amount, 8 tons on a half an acre. I think that pretty much blows the USDA charts right off the charts.
Right.
They donate it to the local food pantry.
That whole style is more ancient Chinese than modern American, where you produce 8,000 pounds from a half acre.
Right. Yeah. And so they rely pretty much on community garden volunteers, but their main staff person, Susan Sides, who's their director, she has this great line. She says, "We see our work here as making love visible by growing healthy food and making sure that everyone in our community has access to that healthy food. We're making love visible." I love that.
Oh. And then from there?
Yeah, so...
Tierra Nueva,
New Earth, up in Washington State in the Skagit Valley. So you opened the show with talking about your visit to a prison, and it's really interesting at Tierra Nueva. They work with people in gangs and in prison, the local jail, people who've recently gotten out of prison, people who might be on their way to prison, who they are trying to to steer away from prison. So they're very much involved with folks like that, and part of what they do is give them constructive, meaningful work, both on their organic farm and in their coffee roasting business. And so, for instance, their chief coffee roaster, Zach Joy, was a former crystal meth cook, and they met him on their visits to the local jail. And when he got out, he came to work at their coffee roasting business, and they realized that, you know, as a former crystal meth cook, he had all these skills, you know, and he could be redirecting those skills toward better ends. And so they made him the chief coffee roaster. And he does great in that role, and he roasts all their coffee and blesses each batch of beans as they come out, and he's thriving in that role. One of the, but coming back to your original prison idea, it reminded me of, one of the stories I tell in the book, which is the story of Bones. And Bones is he's a young Latino guy who, has been in prison the past few years. And for a time, he was in solitary confinement. And he grew up as a migrant worker in the Skagit Valley, picking blackberries and blueberries and strawberries. And so he grew up kind of on the land. And while he was in solitary confinement, he had this vision of wanting to start a farm when he got out for people like him. And he wants to call it Hope for Homies. A farm that would take in guys who've recently gotten out of prison and give them constructive work to do. And I got to interview Bones about that vision. It was really exciting to hear about. Hope for Homies.
Hope for Homies. You know, once I worked, when I worked for NBC Television, I did a piece on a guy named B.T. Collins out here in California, who was the Governor Jerry Brown hired him to be the lead, the director of the California Conservation Corps. And he was a retired Marine guy, but somehow he had all of these kids who were one step away from jail getting up at 4 a.m. and working their butts off outside, and they love this man for giving them the opportunity to have something real to do with their two hands and with their minds. And it was just, it just seems like so much of what you're talking about there as well. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson with Fred Bonson. When we get back, we want to talk about the big question of the day, and that is, can feeding the soil feed the spirit as well? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Right back. Welcome back. So few minutes to talk in and so much to talk about. One of them I would like to talk with Fred Bonson about is his experience at the Ottima Farm in Connecticut before we tune out. What was it like up there, Fred?
Yeah, I went to Ottima during the Jewish Feast of Sukkot, which is the fall harvest festival. And this would have been the time when Israelite farmers back in days of yore would have brought their grain offerings to the temple in Jerusalem. And that festival continues, but, you know, it was an ancient agrarian festival. And so I got to go to a real Jewish farm up in Connecticut where they, you know, where they're really bringing in the harvest. And it was an amazing week, just filled with amazing food. We ate outside in the sukkah, this big open-air tent with a thatched roof. We ate all our meals out there. And these folks have a really highly productive 4-acre organic farm, which unfortunately had just been flooded when I was there by Hurricanes Lee and Irene.
Such is nature, right?
2011. Such is nature, yeah. And they carried on with the festive activities nonetheless. And one of the things that I was really struck by was their practice of Sabbath, their practice of Shabbat. And so on Friday afternoon, you know, the whole place pretty much shut down for about 24 hours. And people turned off their cell phones. They turned off computers. We had these long, lingering meals. It was just this amazing, restful time and people playing music late into the night. And I was sort of interviewing different folks and getting their take on the special thing happening there that week, the Feast of Sukkot. And I interviewed Nigel Savage, who is the director of Hazan, which is the largest Jewish environmental organization in the country. And Nigel was talking about how important Sabbath is to Jewish tradition and really taking a one day a week to just stop and rest and enjoy each other and, you know, enjoy good food and conviviality and conversation. And it's not something sort of that you have to do. It's not a, you know, it's not so much that you don't work. It's that you get to enjoy this other way of living. And I was really drawn to the attractiveness of that and came back to my own family and farm and was determined to start practicing it. And so we have a family practice now where we turn off all the screens on Saturday night and keep them off until Sunday night, computers, cell phones, and the rest. And we just relax and do fun stuff and eat good meals and hang out in the garden. And we really find that, you know, if we don't get that, we end up just kind of in a frazzled state.
Amen. You know, we have a couple seconds left here, but yeah. The ancient prayer, we beg you, God, make us truly alive. Can feeding the soil make us truly alive, help us make there?
I think it can. I think it can. I think more of us need to find ways to reconnect with the soil, especially in the urban areas. We need to find ways to get our hands in the dirt.
Just like the prisoners. Folks, this has been the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Fred Bonson, the author of Soil and Sacrament. Thank you all for tuning in. And remember, cheap food isn't. Thank you, Fred.
Thank you, Michael.
Listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.